Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Midweek Takeaway. Today we're joined by Rupert Virko, CEO of Cobra Resources. Welcome back, Rupert.
Thanks, Phil.
The company reports exceptional progress in its ongoing bench scale study for in-situ recovery, ISR, of rare earth elements at its Boland project in South Australia. The study reveals high recoveries of valuable heavy rare earths, achieving up to 82% recovery with low impurities and acid consumption, highlighting the potential for low-cost and non-invasive production. The Australian Nuclear Scientific and Technical Organisation, ANSTO, is conducting the trials, which show promising results with a unique geology that supports ISR, a method that could disrupt global heavy rare earth supply chains. Further results are expected in the coming weeks. Tell us more, Rupert.
Yeah, look, the results that we've released today are really exciting. What we've been able to do is we've increased our acidity slightly, and what that's resulted in is really high recoveries, up to 82% terbium. But what is great about this work is it's shown that normally with higher or more intense acidic conditions, you see much higher levels of impurities. And that increases the cost of your purification processes. What we're seeing is higher recoveries of the rare earths, but they're not coming through with higher levels of those impurities like alumina and iron, which complicate the purification process. So that's a really encouraging point. Acid consumption is still low. And what we're seeing is we've got plenty of room to be able to optimize the lixiviant that we're going to be able to use in the IS process. So very encouraging. We're starting to see the right indicators in our bench scale studies that suggest that we're going to be successful in that process. So we're really excited about what the next few weeks bring from our follow-up testing.
Yeah, it really does sound like great news. It sort of confirms what you've always thought, that you were able to do this, obviously with the in-situ recovery mining to start with, and then obviously now to release those rare earths with the low acidic consumption. I mean, you were talking about sort of the acidity of a wine glass or a glass of red wine. Maybe you've upped that a little bit based on what these results say, but ultimately you've managed to release the rare earths. So give us an idea, just so people understand how the rare earths work. You've got high recoveries, you've got 78% PR. What's that? 75% ND, 77% DY, and 82% TB, which is terbium, as you've just said. Which of those is the most important, if there is one? And, you know, what are they all used in?
Sure. So, Kevin, let's just talk about those four rare earths. They're the magnet rare earths. So they're what's required to produce the high-strength permanent magnets that go into electric motors or electric vehicles, wind turbines, and your everyday Milwaukee battery drill. So they're like they're like pixie dust that make things more efficient. And what's important is neodymium and praseodymium are light rare earths. The value of them isn't as high as the heavy rare earths, and the heavy rare earths are dysprosium and terbium. Now, this sample that this testing has been done on has a head grade over 0.5%, which is very high for an ionic clay. And rating or our ratio of heavy rare earths is very high. We have over 28% of that grade being heavy rare earths and a combined grade of 150 ppm of dysprosium and terbium. So if you look at how that stacks up to other clay projects, the grades are very favourable and the mixture or the ratios of the valuable rare earths are very high. And we couple them with Kevin, very high recoveries, and doing that through a very low-cost form of mining of in-situ recovery, and we're starting to paint the picture of a pretty compelling rare earth project.
Very good. So that gives people an idea. You've got the heavy rare earths and the light rare earths, but the diagnostic sample here that you put in, was 5,230 parts per million of total rare earth oxide, where valuable MREOs totaled 1,046. So that's just about 20%.
That's just the NdPr, and then the DyTb is 152. There are more heavy rare earths that are valuable. So what are the other heavy rare earths? We're talking yttrium, ymerium. There's a whole suite of them. Some of them I probably can't pronounce for it well enough to be able to talk through them.
Better than me, I can tell you that.
What's important about them? Well, europium, that's important for 5G fiber optic cable. Look, they've all got their own important uses. And what the benefit of these ionic clays is they're generally better endowed and better weighted in the heavy rare earths as opposed to a hard rock carbonatite that has much more, might be much higher grade, but generally has a higher ratio of the light rare earths, being cerium, lanthium, neodymium, and praseodymium. So that's the benefit. And the added benefit on top of that is the ease of recovery. And as we're seeing today, low acid consumption, ambient temperature, very rapid recoveries, and the ability to be able to emulate that through the ISR process. So we're starting to really tick a number of boxes here, Kevin, around cost efficiency for extraction.
So in simple terms, the in-situ recovery is effectively you spraying large amounts of water to bring it up. Is that fair to say?
So how it works, Kevin, if you imagine that the ore body's relatively shallow, it sits at about 25 meters, and the ore body is confined between two impenetrable clay boundaries. So it is an aquifer, but when we're talking about the aquifer, it's two times saltier than the sea. So the water's not nice, doesn't have any value for agricultural or human consumption purposes. What we do is we drill holes into that aquifer, and we do them in pattern arrays, and we inject lixiviant into the groundwater, and we extract it at the same time. And what we aim to do is lower the acidity of that aquifer and perform a process called ion exchange, where we exchange a salt ion for the rare earth metal ions, and then we extract that back out. So what's good? Look, we don't need to move a single cubic meter of dirt in this process. We're effectively mining the valuable metals out of the ground already in solution. And so what that means, Kevin, is we don't need to be spending a lot of money on the above ground infrastructure either. We don't need to have a lot of equipment to crush, screen, and contain large amounts of ore to be able to treat it. We're effectively doing it in the ground. So it cuts out a lot of the capital cost associated with getting these mines up and running.
Very good. It's a good explanation. So tell us, in terms of the world market then, who controls most of the rare earths, the heavy rare earths especially? Who controls that? And, you know, what will make this profitable for both shareholders and the end user? But will it be because, you know, there just isn't enough of the rare earths, or is it a cost situation?
So, Kevin, China have been very successfully advancing technology with rare earths for a very long period, and the West is fast trying to catch up. They have dominated the mining, processing, and downstream processes of heavy rare earths, and they still do. They account for 70% of the mined quantities and over 95% of the process of downstream refined heavy rare earths. They have been able to get into this dominant position because their ionic clay projects or deposits, they do mine through a process of in-situ recovery. But I must stress that their process is not controlled. It's not confined in an aquifer. It's using gravity on topography or large hills, and they're using the gravity to permeate it into the ground. Now, what that does is it means that they can't confine and constrain the lixiviant, and that acid can effectively come to the surface and cause significant environmental degradation. So there's this huge difference between our styles of ore bodies. And what's important about that is, one, ore body is hugely scalable. We think we have a province scale occurrence. We've defined mineralization over a 139 square kilometer footprint, and we think it'll go beyond that. But we're in a geological formation that is very similar to a number of uranium occurrences that are currently mined through in situ recovery in South Australia and across the globe. In situ recovery really accounts for, and this is the controlled type that we're looking to implement at Boland, over 60% of the uranium mined globally. And how's it got to that point? Well, it's because it's more cost effective. And because it's so cost effective, it's been able to, and those projects are more resilient in market downturns and have been able to stay in operation and make money. So we're not reinventing the wheel. What we've done is we've discovered a very unique rare earth occurrence, and we're applying proven technology in a systematic process that's very environmentally credentialed.
Okay, very good. So from a financial perspective, because of the costs that you will incur to bring this up and then obviously release it with the with the acid solutions, how profitable could this be? Obviously, got to wait for PFS and all of those other things, but I mean, you don't walk into these things blindly. How profitable could it be to operate this?
Look, we'd like to think it could be very strategic and very profitable. I think what's important is, as Australians, we dig up material and ship it off, and we do that very well, and we're good at making money out of it. However, if you look at rare earth production globally, there aren't a lot of heavy rare earth projects being advanced, and there's cost challenges associated with that. So simplistic process is better. And what we would like to think is that once we can demonstrate through a very scalable resource, we can be within the lowest cost quartile of producers, providing a very high ratioed and highly valued mixed rare earth carbonate. So what this work we're doing at the moment, Kevin, I know you wish I was putting numbers to what I'm saying.
No, I wouldn't want you to put yourself in a bad position, but I think people just want to know, I mean, you know, the potential profit margin. If it costs this much, are we going to double the money that comes out? Are we going to treble the money that comes out? Are we going to make 20%? You know, that I suppose is the sort of ballpark that people would like to hear, I would imagine.
Yeah, look, understood. And what we want to do through this test work is highlight what the economic benefits of this style of mining and this discovery is. And what this work is doing is it's giving us the engineering parameters and the metallurgical parameters to be able to make those cost analyses and to be able to bring them to the market. So our strategy here is very much focused on demonstrating what these economic benefits are. And we have a well field in the ground. We've drilled it. It's very cost effective to put that in. We know what the costs of that are. This test work and the bench scale test work that's underway will enable us to have the right technical data to support cost assumptions. And when we have produced an MREC, we're going to have an understanding of what our marketability is and our ability to obtain offtakes. And at that point, Kevin, I'm going to be able to tell you with some confidence what the financial metrics of this project will look like.
Just for the London-based people, the statement that you made there about MREC, what does that stand for?
So it's a mixed rare earth carbonate. So that's the first point of production. And I think what we're conscious of is we'd like to be able to take this opportunity into operation as quick as possible. That would be the first point. We don't want to bound ourselves with capital burdens, but there's opportunities then to separate out that carbonate into separate oxides and add value or downstream value to your process. that's not something that we're looking at this point. We want to get to something that's marketable and saleable and demonstrate economic benefits of the Bolam project.
Okay, very good. Well, the market has reacted positively, but I would hasten people to do some research on this, especially as you already have this gold asset. Just explain in less than a minute what gold asset you also have as part of Cobra Resources.
Yeah, we have a gold resource just under 280,000 ounces, very shallow. The gold market's flying at the moment. Shallow gold assets at 1.5 grams are very, very nice to have. And we have advancing neighbours that are developing infrastructure. So we have opportunities that we're looking to explore to provide a low capital source of ore that can be toll treated at other assets. And look, it's a very nice thing to have in a very strong gold market.
I know it's not probably a question you can answer, but you have a market capitalization of £7 million. Is that gold asset worth more or less than that £7 million?
Look, it's a problem across the board of many explorers and mineral developers at the moment, Kevin, that there is a significant disconnect between assets in the ground and their valuation and what the value on the market is of gold companies that are in production and printing money. What I think we'll see soon is we'll see a valuation reset across the board, particularly if gold stays above $2,500 an ounce, because there aren't that many good gold assets being discovered year on year. So very strategic holding of that resource, and it's going to be very valuable at some point. So look, it's not just Cobra. I think that gold is undervalued across the capital markets at present.
Yeah, just so people can understand, even at all in sustaining costs of $1,500 US, then basically you're looking at in-ground, or not an in-ground, it'll be an out-of-ground value of $258 million US.
Exactly.
For that asset. So, I mean, it isn't worth that much, for sure it isn't worth that much, because somebody's got to put the infrastructure in and do all the work that needs to be done. But it has an intrinsic value which is much, much higher than your current market cap, in my view. But yeah, let's see how it all plays out. I think it's one for everybody to watch. And what can we expect from you over the coming months?
Sure, mate. So what we're really trying to firm up through this metallurgical program is those economic points around acid consumption optimization. So getting that right balance between recovery and impurities. And we're then emulating that through ISR bench scale study. So what we'll see is we'll see further diagnostics to find that economic sweet spot of between recovery and impurities. And then beyond that point, in the coming weeks, we'll be bringing the results of our bench scale study to the market as well. So a lot of good positive news flow coming forward. And I think what we should probably highlight is what we're doing is really unique in the industry. It's almost a world first, this aquifer controlled ISR process for rare earths. And what we're seeing is very encouraging, and we're very excited about it.
Good. We look forward to more positive news from you. It seems to be we've had nothing but positive news, but the share price hasn't really responded at all. So, we know we're in a bit of a quagmire in terms of the market, but I think there are a few diamonds sticking out of the rough, and I think you'll certainly looking like very good potential. So let's see how it all goes over the next few months.
Well, thank you very much, Kevin. Much appreciated.
On that note, we'll say Rupert Virchow, CEO of Cobra Resources, thanks very much for your time.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.